donate your car today.
1-877 cars for kids. KARS cars for kids. 1-877 cars for kids. Donate your car today.
To learn more about our programs and to donate, go to carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K. Pickup is quick and easy. You'll also get a vacation voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 cars for kids. KARS cars for kids. 1-877 cars for kids. Donate your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Lawrence Holmes is our colleague at The Score, and you can listen to him at noon today. He is also a professor of media at DePaul, and you see him on NBC Sports Chicago. Good morning, Lawrence. He joins us on the El Pamonte Ford Hotline at El Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park.
Hey, Lawrence.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Wow, what an awful weekend, Lawrence. You know, just awful to watch it on television, to see everything that's happened. I don't know. Your perspective is totally different than ours, but I don't know anybody that could have watched that George Floyd video and not feel, I know it's outrage, but it's also almost like the saddest thing ever when that went on for as long as it went on, and you hear him telling the cop with his knee on his neck that he can't breathe, and then calling for his mother. I got to tell you, that tore me up. And then to see the response and everything that's happened over the last week, it's just sort of taken the curtain and pulled it back on everything that is going on in this country.
Yeah, and Molly, I'm glad that you aren't running away from that part of it, because I think that over the last couple of days that's the part that seems to get washed out, that everyone's worried about the logistics of protest and whether there are provocateurs that are trying to co-opt movements, that are trying to really just ask for something that's very simple, and that's police reform, the end of police brutality. To me, that's an issue where I feel as if it really shouldn't have any sort of dividing line among race or socioeconomic status, that we should all be able to look at police brutality and, in the case of George Floyd, go, things have got to change. And I've found it frustrating that you often get clapped back with, well, there are a lot of good cops out there. Obviously, there are a lot of good cops out there, but I challenge all of those good cops to step in. That if there were good cops that were in front of George Floyd, they should have stopped him from being murdered on the street. But what we saw is three police officers holding a man down, and one holding a man down by his neck with a knee on his neck, while another police officer just stood there and stared. And if police forces across the country aren't going to police themselves, then the rest of us have no chance against them. If there's a fear inside of those police departments that they can't speak up for fear of retribution, then there's no chance for any of this stuff to get better. The cycle is going to repeat. And we saw it was in Seattle, I believe, where there was an officer that was doing a similar restraining hold against, and the other officer moved their knee off the person's neck to their back. Now, I don't know if that happens if there wasn't such of a spotlight put on what happened in Minneapolis, or if that officer didn't realize that he and his partner were being filmed. Those are the things that have to be addressed. Those are the things. And the other things, and I'll just say from my standpoint, I've grown really tired of Fraternal Order of Police spokespeople dog whistling whenever their members are called to the carpet for their lack of responsibility and care with the citizens that they are supposed to serve and protect.
Lawrence, you used the term police brutality, and I think that is exactly appropriate, and it applies here. But you don't hear a lot when you hear people talking about the systemic change is sort of the code word, and that's the way they talk around this. Does that bother you? Have you noticed that? And have there been other ways that this has been talked about? Because I know that you are, you know, you study this stuff and you pay close attention to this stuff. Other things that have stood out to you that have been problematic in your mind?
Yeah, you know what, David, and it's like I was saying, like the job of being a police officer is so hard, and the people that decide that they want to do it, almost all of them come into it being people who are brave, that they're a little bit different than most people, that they run towards danger while other people run away from it. But with the things that they've seen, I'm not sure that these officers get everything they need as far as mental health training. I'm not sure that I am sure that they're not paid enough. And I'm not sure that they get what they need as far as being as active in the community. And we hear this all the time from politicians, that is something that they're going to try and do, but it always seems to get lost in the wash once the politicians come to power. And I want them to be as safe as they can be. I just want them to make sure that they are trying to take care of people that once those people are in custody, that there's no need for some of this activity. And it breaks my heart that we're still in this place, that we're still watching citizens die at the hands of police. And those are the things that I want people to care about. And I want police officers to understand that we understand how hard their job is. But when I hear the type of rhetoric that comes from FOP spokespeople, it makes it feel as if it is very us against the community. And in the case of Illinois' FOP spokesperson, it feels like it's the police versus black people. And those are things that have to stop. That's why there is mistrust amongst the black community and law enforcement. And it's not universal. I mean, I was talking to a police officer last week while, you know, down at Apostolic Church, they were doing a food drive, and this officer was more than willing to help out and help divert traffic and keep people safe while all of this stuff was going on while dealing with a pandemic. I mean, those are things that I think that do need to have a spotlight put on them. But in the meantime, those officers that see officers doing bad, they have to be rooted out. They have to be held responsible, because it makes all of them look bad. And it's not a profession that can allow for that. In other areas of our economy, there can be bad salespeople, bad radio hosts, there can be, you know, bad electricians, because most of those people don't have their hands on someone's life. And that's what our police officers do. They have the power to take life away. So if good officers aren't doing the job of not just stopping those bad officers from taking life, but getting them out of their police forces, then we're doomed as a society. And you can see politicians buckling to the power of the police lobby. Over the last 72 hours, you've seen it. You've seen our mayor here in Chicago, who ran on a message of reform, who ran on that. Like, that was her big thing. I talked to Lori Lightfoot in person in Hyde Park about her ideas about reform. And what we saw from her was using the tactics of her predecessors, the ones that she ran against, the ideas that she ran against, because she didn't have a better option or plan to keep the city safe. Those are the things that frustrate me. And David, when you texted me this morning, I had just come back from a ride around the neighborhood. And, you know, I did kind of a concentric circle around around Hyde Park, Woodlawn, Kenwood, Jackson Park this morning. I'm really encouraged by how many peaceful protests there were. There was a great march down Cottage Grove. I was discouraged by the damage that was done to the Walmart, to the Walgreens on Cottage Grove, to Kimbark Plaza on 53rd. And it's hard to figure out what to do with all of this stuff. But at the root of it is what people want, what good people should want, is an end to police brutality. And we should be giving voice to all of those officers who try. We should be supporting them that try their hardest to do the job the right way and to get rid of with no remorse the officers who don't.
He's Lawrence Holmes. You can listen to him at noon, starting at noon today. And Lawrence, you know, obviously, I grew up on the South Side. I've lived in the city for the majority of my life, but I've never been afraid. I've always had a healthy fear of Chicago cops, but I've never been afraid that I was going to be pulled over because of my race. I've never been afraid that I was going to be mistreated because of my race. A totally different life experience than what a lot of people have gone through. Can you tell us of your own personal experiences? Have you had a talking to about how to behave? Did your parents have to talk to you? I mean, it has nothing to do with how you're behaving, but what you have to do to get through it.
Molly, I was talking with some people last night. Our friend Jason Goff did this incredible kind of town hall Zoom, and we were talking on it last night. I'll be 45 on Saturday. I went to go see my parents Saturday afternoon, hung out with them, and my mother wanted me to make sure that I got home safe. And she wasn't talking about worrying about getting through the South Side, worrying about my neighbors, and worrying about protests or looting. She's worried about the police. I'm a grown man, and she's still worried about that. My interactions overall with Chicago police officers has been, I would say, positive, especially in my neighborhood, the ones that are on the beat in Hyde Park, ones that work at the University of Chicago. I would say it's overall positive. I have had incidents where I'm in the suburbs, and I was telling the story last night. Like, I was driving around with a friend in the suburbs. She happens to be white. We got pulled over, and this officer asked her if she was in the car of her free will. Like, there's a level of fear that ends up happening when any person of color sees those flashing lights behind them. And it's not even, and I think that it happens for anyone. I think that, you know, if you guys were getting pulled over, that there would be some fear. You're like, well, what did I do wrong? You know, that sort of thing. But I think that it's amplified when you're a person of color and you're worried if you're going to survive the encounter. And it's not always about, well, make sure you follow the directives of the police officers. That doesn't even seem to matter anymore. It's just a very convenient trope for people who want to accept when people are being brutalized by the police. And what I've always thought was fascinating is that the lack of empathy for those that might be on the other end of a political spectrum. If we think of American politics in a U shape, where people who are on the left and people on the right are closer together on issues of authoritarianism, for example, that those people, when it comes to their rights, they want to be able to express their rights, and they don't want the government to tread on them. When I say that I don't want the government to tread on me in the way of police brutality, I don't understand why they can't see it that way and say, hey, you know, this is an authoritarian act, and we shouldn't support this because that person's skin color is different, or because they're from the inner city. We should be supporting that no police department or officer or government should be able to tread on its people by making people targets while they're just trying to live their lives.
Lawrence, we both make our living talking about sports. This is a sports talk radio station. when you go on your show, after, I mean, these are great points, and they're terrific. It's terrific insight. How do you see sports playing a role in the recovery from this, if you think that sports can help with the process?
David, I honestly don't know. Like, I've been racking my brain since yesterday on what my show even looks like today. And to tell you the truth, I'm still not sure what it looks like today. And Herbie and I are going to go through some of this stuff and try to figure out whether this is one of those days where we're even talking about sports. I know that you guys have done a good job today of bringing on different voices to try and work through this. I guess it's encouraging in some respects where you're seeing a lot of athletes and a lot of white athletes start to really take notice of what's happening and echo some of the sentiments of their black and brown counterparts in this regard. Like, that's encouraging. What's discouraging is that there are still a lot of leaders of men, especially in the college ranks, that are more than willing to tell you how they feel about everything, except when it comes to issues of race. And that's disappointing. You know, a Dabo Sweeney will get on TV to tell you everything that's wrong with America except for something like this. You know, like that. Those are the things that Mike Gundy will get on TV and get in front of a conference call and tell you everything that's wrong with today's youth, what's wrong with American youth. But he'll be silent when it comes to issues of race and power and class. Those are the things that I hope that if those people are uninformed, that they do listen to their players. And instead of just saying we're going to have a dialogue, have an actual dialogue about these things, and understand that they're not the ones speaking from a place of authority on this, that their experience does not qualify them to speak from a place of authority, and give their athletes an opportunity to educate them. That education is supposed to be reciprocal, that they're supposed to be able to learn, and the best coaches are the ones that do learn from those experiences and then can apply it. So that's where I hope sports goes with this. But, I mean, I was frustrated as anybody seeing that statement from the NFL, because I'm just sitting there going, right. You know, when there was someone who was trying to bring attention to this, you as a league decided that you were going to blackball them. There's someone that was actually doing the most peaceful type of protest who has been blackballed from the NFL and then defamed on top of it. You've had people just go into, he's not good at quarterbacking, he's not this, he's not that. And Colin Kaepernick has been out here in he's been in Chicago. He's been at the DuSable Museum in Chicago talking to people about their rights. So there's a lot of ways to go, and I'm trying to work through my anger and my sadness with the way things are. I am encouraged by the people who reached out to me over the weekend personally, like the friends of mine that reached out to me, like that means something. People who said to me, I can't understand where you're coming from, but I understand that you're hurting. I would suggest that anyone who has friends that are people of color, that those type of sentiments go a really long way. That when you have people that just care about your well-being enough to go, I don't totally get it, but I'm willing to listen and try and understand it, it makes a big difference. And I think that that's where all of us can start to learn from each other. And I appreciate you guys giving me the platform to talk on your show.
Well, we're delighted to have you on, Lawrence.
And thanks, Lawrence.
We'll be listening at noon. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Talk to you later.
That's Lawrence Holmes. Wow. Want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Yeah, our thanks to our crew. Thank you, Dustin Rhodes. Thanks to Kevin. Wow, tough crew. And Ray, bless you, sir.
Kirby.
Thank you, Ray.
Always nice to Ray. David, have yourself a great day. We'll be talking through everything. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago.
Have a great day,
Sports
Mully.
Radio. 6-7 to the score.
This segment brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto.
End the story.